us and Denver. I mean,
Sixers and Denver.
you already know I'm going with us. I'm not gonna never go against us. You know it. I'm not gonna do it. I mean, I like what we got. I mean, I'm confident in it. I'm confident in it. You know what I mean? We got.
You should be the East wide open.
Wide open.
There you go, Hugh. That was Allen Iverson predicting a Sixers Nuggets NBA Finals. You see that in a couple
weeks?
Wide
open, yeah. Wide open. Wide open.
It is wide open, but they got to win this game, man. Got to win
this
game.
It starts now, but like I said, I feel that, you know, going into this finals with a healthy Joel Embiid, we got the best player out there. MVP for a reason. Best player out there. So, yeah, I think that bodes well for us.
Tom Kelly in for Joe Giglio today here on the Midday Show, and that's one of the questions we're asking. A lot of stuff we're talking about today, but one of the questions we're asking going in Wednesday night, are you more confident or nervous? Sixers play-in game against the Miami Heat. Hugh's confident. I'm nervous, and I'm just really scared, Hugh. I don't know. Am I
gonna
a
get
wuss?
You a puppy? Yeah,
am
a little
I a
bit.
Wuss?
That's a little bit of that's a little bit of a wuss way of handling things a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Say I'm
soft.
Scared.
Yeah. Just a little bit. You shouldn't be scared, man. I think this is a time you can have butterflies in your stomach. Mm. I mean, that's okay. But to say you're scared now, I think that this team has been playing with a lot of confidence. I like the confidence that Tyrese Maxey has been displaying. I'm okay with it. I know that there's a lot there. As far as the past, and people don't want to forget what happened in the past and things of that nature, I'm a year by year kind of guy. Hope springs eternal every year. Hell, I played for the Jets for three seasons, and it got worse progressively every year after the fact. Like I went 3-13 the first year, then turned right back around and went 1-15.
And Hugh Douglas just keeps working.
Went 9-7. So it's one of those things, man. That's why I can't help but to be optimistic. And I know that for a lot of fans, you know. The heartache and pain that you felt over the past few years, it kind of is compounded.
I get it. And typically,
I'm not there with that. Not there with that.
Typically, I would feel that way. But the Sixers have just broken our hearts so many times.
Oh, no, I
so
get it.
Many times.
Last year was – it was heart-wrenching, you know. But as a former player, you know, thinking about times where it's come up, we've come up short, you just have to bounce back and be ready for it, man. Last year was tough, though. I get it. You know, because it was an up and down. You know, you had Harden coming out there hitting 30 and then Joel Embiid looking like he's turning the corner. And then all of a sudden, the wheels fell off the wagon. It doesn't feel to me like this year is going to be a year where, you know, it's going to be that type of letdown. It feels to me like they're going to fight tooth and nail to go as deep as they possibly can in this.
I just feel like we're going a little overboard with the playoff Jimmy Butler and Miami Heat thing. Like, if Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat are so great, why are they an 8 seed in the play-in right now? I can explain to you why the Sixers are in the play-in, because one of the best players in the league was injured for like 40 games. Like, the Miami Heat didn't have one of those kind of injuries. They're in the play-in. They're not that good.
But, Kyle, this is the thing. They were in the play-in last year, and they went to the finals
I know.
Last season.
I understand that. But, like, I don't – like, first of all, that was last year. That was a rare thing for an 8 seed to go all the way to the finals in a weak conference, and the conference is weak again. But like when we go out there and like on Wednesday, we will have Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey. I think two of the three best players on the floor in that game. So there's no reason for us to be scared of Jimmy Butler.
I'm stunned. I'm stunned between you guys and the callers we've spoken to. The confidence in this is the Sixers, guys. This is the Sixers. This team has let us down for our entire lives.
Feels different, though, man. Feels different.
I hope so.
I mean, we got a damn good coach. And it doesn't feel like – to me, it just doesn't feel like Joel Embiid feels the pressure that he's felt in the past a little bit.
And plus, like, I know the Miami Heat went all the way to the finals last year, but, like, we have to – like, Jimmy Butler has not won a championship, right? Like,
no.
He's gotten pretty far.
Yeah,
like, we can't keep talking about them like they're some juggernaut. They got waxed by the Nuggets in the finals last year.
I mean, he's been to two finals in 4 years. It's pretty damn good.
The bubble was a joke. We all know that.
Well, I don't know.
I
feel like last year kind of validated the bubble a little bit. I was a bubble joke guy, but now they did it last
Come on,
year.
Man. You know? It's a joke.
All right. Okay. There you go.
That is funny. The bubble was a joke.
It was. The whole thing was a joke, man.
I don't know about that. I mean, a championship is a championship, and I do respect how hard it is to get to a championship game. So, I mean, I understand that, you know, everybody was on lockdown except for Lou because Lou went to get some lemon pepper.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Lou broke the bubble. I forgot about that story.
Yeah.
Man, that feels like a million years ago, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it does.
We're dealing with Lou Williams and his chicken wing controversies.
Yeah, chicken wing.
Yeah,
there'll be more chicken wing controversy later on in the show.
Really?
Oh,
is
yeah.
that right?
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
All right. Well, we'll get into tease. That. I'm very interested in that later on. But doesn't this feel like a must-win game for Joel on Wednesday night? Like, this feels like
you can't exit. You can't get out. You can't. You can't go home early. If that's what you're saying.
Legacy game.
I feel like it's a legacy game. It is. I mean, a play-in legacy game for Joel Embiid on Wednesday night, because if they end up playing the Celtics, that's a real tough matchup. Like to avoid
that. Out of the gate, that is a tough matchup. But this one, like, I feel good about this one and potentially the next one.
They beat the Knicks.
Yeah, they beat the Knicks. They definitely beat the Knicks.
Yeah, I feel good about that as well. And how about Spike defecting at the perfect time
for
a potential Sixers-Knicks series?
He starts
tomorrow.
Yeah, he's leaving. He's leaving. He's getting out of there.
Yeah.
Getting out of there with the quickness.
Perfect.
Smart man.
How about that?
Yeah, that would have probably been tough.
Yeah, that would have been a rough series for him up there in New York. 215-592-9494. If you want to get in, let's go back to the phones. Go to Dominic. What's up, Dominic?
Hey, we're talking baseball. How about Tom pitch hitting for Joe Giglio? That's pretty cool, Tom.
Oh, thanks, Dominic. Yeah, I'm pinch hitting off the bench. Hopefully I do better than the Phillies pinch hitter.
You know what? Shut up.
No, wait. Hey, you, Douglas. You.
What's going on, my man? How you doing?
Good. Don't you dare bounce that ball when you throw out that first pitch.
I'm definitely not trying to do that, man. I'm definitely not, Dominic. I'm definitely not trying to do that.
Can I suggest one thing?
I'll take all the suggestions I can get. What you got?
Step and throw. Do not throw flat-footed. Step and throw to home plate.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny, Dominic? Like, and I know it's been annoying to Kyle, but every day I come in here, like, I didn't do it today, Tom. But I will throw, step and throw into the wall. I got a tennis ball.
Attaboy.
Just step and throw into the wall every day.
That's good. Like, yeah, just a BP, like a good BP guy.
Step and throw. Because it doesn't, like not a whole lot of velocity.
That's
just
right.
The mechanics.
Repeat the motion.
No,
yeah, that's it. Just repeat the motion.
And
so then when I get out there, it's just natural.
And you got to hold the ball four seam, not two seam.
Four seam. Yeah, don't try to get cute with it.
Are you going from the top of the mound, or are you going in front of the mound?
No, I'm going from the front of the mound.
Oh, okay.
I'm not I don't want to put any more pressure on myself than I already have, you know, just to get the ball over the plate. So I'm just gonna, you know, just throw it and just get comfortable with the throwing motion.
That's a good call.
I got confidence in you.
Thank you, sir.
A couple things I want to say, and two things that's got to stop. And I heard Tom say it earlier, and I heard many people say it, that we win with Kyle Schwarber leading off, and that's not true. We haven't won diddly yet with Kyle. And I get the home run when he leads off. It's nice to give his pitcher a 1-0 lead, or if they're down 2-0 and he hits a homer, cuts the lead. That's great. I love Kyle Schwarber. And another thing that's got to stop everybody saying, oh, Kyle Schwarber only leads off once a game. No. He hits in front of Turner 4 or 5 times a game. So here's what I suggest. Go find the analytic department. Whoever them goofballs are, tell them to put in their analytic blender. Turner leading off, put a lefty following Turner. Take Rojas out of center field. Let Brandon Marsh play every day. They went out and got a utility guy and a proven major league hitter like Whit Merrifield. Put him in left field. So put that in the blender, mix that up, and see how many wins you're going to get.
Dominic, Whit Merrifield's 3-for-25 right now.
Listen, and that's another thing we got to stop talking about. Don't be quoting averages until they get 100 at-bats. Because it's go look at back of his major league card. He's a proven major league hitter. Please don't compare 25 at-bats to Whit Merrifield and Rojas. Rojas has had 36 official plate appearances. He hit 8 balls this year out of the infield. When he hits a ground ball, it's like he's hitting a bowling ball. Do you understand? No, you can't go. You can't compare a proven major leaguer to anybody else with averages.
His average is 69 points higher than Merrifield right now.
It's not about it's not about that, Tom. It's not about that. He's a 283 career hitter. He came off a spring hitting 400. Listen, Dombrowski is ignorant and he's stubborn. Okay, you've seen what Rojas did in the NLCS. He was 4-for-60-something in the playoffs. He come off the spring, was pathetic, and now he starts the season pathetic. He's an automatic out. You can't give up 3 outs. You can't give 3 outs of the 27 outs. You can't do it. I know when he gets on base yesterday, it was nice. He hit the base hit. He stole. Listen, this thing about him, his defense, he don't get a chance to save the game. Since when does he get a chance every game to save a game with a game-saving catch? That's baloney. It's baloney. Okay, let me say this in quotes. We're never going to find out what it equates to in wins with Turner leading off for a full season because they're never going to do it. I'll hang up and I'll take notes.
I got you, Dominic, and appreciate the call. First off, can we stop at the Rojas stuff? Okay, like, if we're talking about Johan Rojas not hitting, it's only because the top guys aren't hitting.
Yeah.
Like, if the top guys are hitting, we don't worry about Johan Rojas.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the sour taste that Johan Rojas left in people's mouths last year. Like, because I get it. The bat on his shoulder against the Arizona Cardinals in a situation where we're trying to survive, and he comes up short. I get it. But that's not what he's here for. He's here for his defense. Now, I did have somebody call me a couple weeks ago and said, I remember back in the day when, you know, the ninth hole hitter wasn't talked about as much. Not as much as he's talked about here. I mean, he's out there for his defense, and I think most people know that. But because it's what he's not doing out there is magnified because of what everybody else is not doing.
Right. Like, if Bryce Harper and Realmuto and Castellanos and these guys are hitting, we're not worried about Johan Rojas and what he's doing at the bottom of the order. Like, yes, he started slow. He's hitting 189 right now. It's not good, but Johan Rojas and his offense is not the reason the Phillies are losing games right now.
Yeah, yeah, but that's what people see. They see that Joe coined a phrase last week. It was like the game finds him, and that's the unfortunate thing about it is that a couple times this season, the game has found Johan Rojas, and he's been a liability at the plate. He's definitely been a liability.
I mean, I will say this. He does always seem to come up in, like, big spots.
Yeah, and then he comes up short, and that is frustrating because people are holding out hope that something good can happen, and it just so happens that he's the guy at the plate, and he just comes up short in that situation.
It is frustrating, and, of course, you know, according to most people, the solution to all the Phillies' problems, just move Kyle Schwarber out of the leadoff spot.
Oh, hey, man. Every day.
Everything will get fixed.
Every day.
Jack in Norristown. What's up, Jack?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's going on, Jack?
I know I want to talk about Schwarber, but I want to say something about the Eagles first. It just shows you. You do your job with the Eagles, they're going to take care of you. But the Smith contract, it's great.
Unless you're Sam Reddick, Jack.
Reddick? If he would have hung in there, they would have took care of him. The man had a contract, a year to play. If he plays that contract out, they would have took care of him for the next 2 or 3 years. The man's 30, he's going to be 30 years old before the season. But I want to tell you about Schwarber. And another thing about him, I trust in Howie that between the draft and the start of the season, he's going to shore up that defense. They're going to do something. That's for sure. But I want to say about Schwarber now. You talk about baseball purists. You're not going to find many more than me. I saw my first baseball game at Jai Park in 1948. So you know I go back a little bit. And I understand. Back in them days, Schwarber wouldn't even be on a ball team. If he hit 70 home runs, you can't strike out 215 times. Hit 190. He walks a lot. He gets on base. And you guys saying he don't tie up the bases. There's times when it takes him three hits to score a run. You got to put Trey Turner led off for Washington for years, was the leadoff hitter and the number two hitter for the Dodgers. So I know the guy can do the job. He's just I don't know what's going on with him this year, and hopefully he gets straightened out. But Rob, and I don't think Rob Thompson, our manager, is calling the shots on Schwarber. I think between the analytics outfit, the general manager, and Schwarber, they want to keep him happy, and he wants to lead off.
Yeah, Jack, I disagree with that, man. I think if Rob Thompson thought it was a better decision for the team to move Schwarber, I think he would. I don't think
it sounds like he's been asked that a few times before, and he said, you know, he does well at the leadoff spot. So I don't know if that's the case. I really don't.
I can't see how you think he does well. Rob Thompson's been in baseball for over 40 years. You can't tell me he's not a purist either. The only thing I don't like about him is he's too much Yankees in him. He's too like Girardi with the bullpen. They bring a guy in, rides 6 hours from Rochester, rides at the stadium in fourth inning, and he pitches in the sixth inning, and he pitches the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth. And then other guys he brings in, and he'll pitch them one batter, and they don't win the next inning. I don't get it.
Yeah, Jack, and appreciate the call, man.
I guess that's the ebb and flow of the game, though. It's the feel of the game that Topper has for it.
I mean, that game was a blowout. They just wanted Pinto to eat innings. I mean, they put Pinto in yesterday, and he kind of blew up. So that's not something that's going to be normal. I mean, it's just a different game now with the way pitchers are managed, with the way teams approach lineup construction. It's just different than it used to be, and I just think people have a really hard time adjusting.
Wrapping their mind around that, because like I said, as a baseball player, nothing wrong with that, and that's why most times when people say what they say, I understand where they're coming from, because it is a game that's steeped in a lot of history and a lot of numbers and stats and everything, and they want to keep it that way because those stats are what drives the game, that game especially. Like those old-school stats that have been standing for forever, that really drives that game.
Yeah, and when it comes to the Schwarber thing, I'm like a reformed Kyle Schwarber leadoff person because I used to be one of the hate. I used to be somebody.
You used to hate Kyle at leadoff.
Why didn't I? Yeah, I always liked Kyle Schwarber as a player, but I wanted to move down. I mean, after last year, it's like, what are you gonna do?
You're a born again Schwarber leadoff guy.
I am.
Wow.
Because I remember you and I got into a big Schwarber leadoff argument.
Y'all got
last
into
year.
A tete a tete.
I was filling in for you one day, and me and Kyle got into it.
Well, you know, Kyle does that. Kyle's intimidating when he gets.
I got smoke back here.
Kyle and I both are good at bringing anger out of other people. I don't know what that says about us as people.
That's true.
But
when we hosted next to each other that one day.
That was right after Jonathan Cannon beat the Eagles too.
Yep.
That was not a very positive show that day.
I think the people needed us though.
Yeah.
That day.
Yeah. We were a good combo.
We accurately reflected the feelings of everybody in the Delaware Valley.
Yes, the anger of the fan base after Jonathan Gannon came to the link and kicked the Eagles' ass. Let's go to Ben in Millville. What's up, Ben?
What's up, guys? What's up, you? What's up, Kyle?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
What's up, man?
Doing well. I want to answer this simple and easy question, and everybody might not get this, but I think you guys are smart enough. How many times does Kyle Schwarber lead off in a game?
Guaranteed once.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So he's not – people act like every single time, every, you know, three innings, he's going to lead off. No, it's not. Is it? It's possibly very implausible or close to it, but it's proven that when he leads off, we have a better winning percentage than he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, Ben, yes.
And that's basically has been Topper's argument about the whole thing, when he leads off.
It's really that simple.
Yeah, like, so let it go, people. You know, sing the song, let it go. And, it's so annoying that we're talking about it now, you know, 2 years later. Like, just it's frustrating. And you know, we talk so much about how that mental impact of him crushing a home run that very first or first three pitches or first five pitches that the pitcher throws, and how demoralizing that can be to that starting pitcher.
That's how I see it. Like when you see what he does and you know he ambushes pitches and everything like that and they go yard, that could be like you said, demoralizing for a starting pitcher out there.
Hey, imagine you doing that. You throw you go, all right, I'm gonna throw it, blow by him with this 95 low and away, and he sticks his butt and bat out there and he lofts it to the left field. It'd be like, well, crap. Well, that didn't work.
Yeah, and sometimes guys don't bounce back from that. We were talking to who was we talking to about that? Zach. Zach Wheeler was talking about how, you know, sometimes you go out there and you get rocked a little bit and it's hard to come back from that. You gotta kinda settle down a little bit. And we've seen Nola do it at times.
That's been a big issue for Nola.
Yeah, we've seen him do it at times.
Well, yeah.
It's almost normal, you know, let him throw those one or two long balls and then he settles down and, you know, pray for the offense to win the game.
Yep. No, exactly. Ben, what do you got on the Eagles?
Eagles, I think they are prioritizing the offense a little bit. Like, now, granted, we still have the draft coming up. And, you know, it's anybody's guess to what exactly happens. I hope he doesn't pick in the 20s. You know, that 14 to 25 or 28 range, or, you know, our track record hasn't been good with those draft picks in the past bunch of years. But I don't know. I think defense will fill itself out, the free agency, and that I truly think during the beginning, you know, first couple weeks of the season, see who's still available, you know, I think Howie will do his magic then. But, you know, I don't have much faith in the draft just because I don't think we're exactly hyped for it.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like nobody's hyped for the draft, really.
Yeah, it's just like, well, let's see. Because, you know, the old adage, you know, every rookie you start, you know, is one loss, one more game loss. So it's like, yay. Well, but
I got you, Ben. Appreciate the call, man. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I heard Joe talking about that with John this morning on the morning show. Is why has the excitement not ramped up for this draft? Because I feel it too. It's like it's just not
a little bit of anxiety.
You don't feel like they're going to get a difference maker. I think where they're drafting, and I think that plays into it.
Yeah, I think that they have the potential to, but I don't think offensive line moves the meter, even though that's a position where he could potentially be a difference maker, especially when you talk about all the resources that have been allocated to the offensive side of the ball. That could be definitely a difference maker. A lot of people don't see it that way. A lot of people kind of, like, it feels to me like Eagles fans are wrapping their mind around the concept of what I've been saying since I've been here, that this town, it's a luxury to have a defense. It's not a necessity. That's where we're going right now. And you look at the moves that haven't been made, there's still a possibility, and I know I've been strong on this, been bullish, that I didn't think Slay was going to be here. I'm starting to come around to think that he might be here. I don't think Bradbury is going to be here, though.
Well, at this point, Slay better be here. I mean,
yeah,
he's the best
quarterback. I don't know if they feel – like, I don't feel like is what this defense is – what I think this defense is going to be. I never felt like Slay was going to be a guy that I was going to factor into that because he doesn't want to tackle.
Right.
Tackle adverse. But I feel like moving forward that they're gonna be holes in this defense that they couldn't feel. They're just gonna have to go out there and they're gonna play, and they're gonna put a whole lot of pressure on their offense to go out there and make some things happen.
It certainly seems that way. It certainly looks that way right now. Is that this team's gonna need to win by scoring, and they're gonna need to score a lot of points to win games this year, because that's where they've invested. I mean, a lot of their resources this offseason.
Ton of bread.
215-592-9494. More calls after the break. We'll continue to react to the Devontae Smith extension. Confidence level in the Sixers facing Miami Wednesday and the Phillies. Are you more frustrated or concerned? And also, when we get back, what Rob Thompson had to say about Bryce Harper's slow start. That's coming up next. Hugh Douglas along with Tom Kelly.